right, guys, welcome back. It's been a long time coming. Squadcast revival season. We're looking forward to it. A lot of cool stuff happening. I'm Nathan Hoag, part of Dive Bomb, came over from Ducks Unlimited. Really excited to be here. We've got Cody and Asher with us today. Why don't you guys go ahead and introduce yourselves? Let us know who you are.
So, yeah, Cody Stokes. I started Dive Bomb back in 2011 and started with Silhouette Decoys, and here we are today. It's just been a fun, awesome ride, and glad to be back to podcast.
Yeah, it's been almost over 2 years. If we have past listeners here, you probably remember a couple years ago when we did the podcast. I don't remember how many episodes exactly, but yeah, I'm Asher Tolliver, the former host of the Squadcast, vice president, marketing director. Been in official capacity with Dive Bomb for, I guess, about 7 years now, unofficially, probably coming up on about 10 now. But yeah, it's been a fun ride, and we're excited to see where this journey takes us. But we're excited to bring the podcast back. And as you guys can tell, it's quite different than last time. The sound quality is probably significantly better, and we got the cameras.
We got visual.
So I think it's going to be great.
Bowie back there, you guys can't see him, but he's the mastermind.
Man,
behind
he hooked this
all
stuff
the,
up. Like, look at all these cords.
He's got the whole switchboard. It's all
like,
going on. Yeah.
This is just step up.
Yeah. Welcome to the show.
So, Asher, do you want to talk quickly about what the viewers, what the listeners can expect from the podcast this season? Kind of like, what's changing? Why did we take a break? What's there to look forward to from the podcast side of things? Just explain that a little bit to the viewers.
Yeah, so we ran the podcast for a few years. Like I said, it was late July 2022, our last episode. We did one on freelance waterfowl hunting basics and talking about, you know, going out and how to, you know, scout, read maps, knock on doors, get permission, stuff like that. And we said then that was going to be the last one for a while. We didn't put a timeline on that, but I talked to Cody and just told him as we were going into the busy season, we were growing really, really fast. It was too much. And I just couldn't quite keep up with it on my own anymore. We had a lot of amazing guests during that time, the first run of the podcast. And it went well, you know, a lot of positive reviews, and people have been asking me every time we go to Game Fair or Squad Fest or NWTF, people come and say, hey, you guys going to bring the podcast back? You're going to bring it back? And my answer's kind of been like, yeah, we'll see, you know, so.
Someday.
We kind of started churning this up, you know, a couple, I don't know, within the last 6 or 8 weeks, talking about bringing it back. And so we're excited to bring it back. I'm not going to be hosting it anymore, but I'll still be around. You're mostly going to see from Nathan and Cody, and it'll follow a similar trajectory from what it was, but you know, it's going to be a lot better. I mean, with the quality of the equipment we have here. I mean, I'm sitting at my house and I'm like calling people. I've got this little cord hooked up to my cell phone and I'm like, can you hear me? And then there's people being like, dude, I can only hear out of one ear of my headphones. So the quality is going to be significantly better. But it's still going to be, you know, Dive Bomb and what we do. Like, some episodes are going to be about how to make you a better waterfowl hunter, tips and tricks, what we're seeing out there, migration reports. And like in the past, we're going to have interesting and exciting guests on that you guys want to hear from and let them tell their stories and their journeys and, you know, just give general background information on who they are and how, you know, yep, they're maybe affiliated with Dive Bomb.
And then the advent of me coming on, not necessarily as a co-host, Nathan will be the host, I should say. We'll give you insight into what's going on at Dive Bomb, some farm aspect of things. We've had that new release of Home Turf lately that's been, I'd say, fairly popular, more popular than I had ever expected. I mean, I don't know how many people come up to me at Squad Fest and say, I really loved the video on Home Turf with the content and land management side of things, so we'll include that. And then, yeah, there's a lot more to come. It's good.
Asher, did you pause the podcast? Was that before you had Jake and Jordan on board full-time, or was that after you guys brought them on board?
You guys, Jake and Jordan, I say you guys, I'm looking over there because Jake's sitting over there. They're on year three of travel with us. So
it's roughly the same time.
I guess
time.
They would have been with us for a little bit. They would have come on in like, what, May?
Yeah.
April, May. So they would have been with us for a little bit. But, you know, we're kind of training them up and getting them up to speed with the program. And the podcast, is as great as it was, it just wasn't at the top of the priority list going into the season. But now we've got, you know, we've got the pieces and the people to be able to do this. And we're excited to bring it back, because I have no doubt it's going to be awesome. And you know what I think is really cool is seeing and hearing more from this guy. And I think that's why a lot of people like the Home Turf Series. Not that Cody's like been hands off or people don't know who Cody is, but they see a lot from the travel guys,
the road crew.
They see me a lot. I mean, people see me a lot over the years. They see me in the Facebook group and on Instagram all the time and stories, and they see Matt Judy and they see Jake and Jordan. They're behind the camera, but they don't see from Cody as much. And I think it's really cool. And I told Cody over text, I said, the fact, like, you are so hands-on involved in everything that happens with Dive Bomb, and everybody, a lot of people know that, but a lot of people don't know how involved the owner, founder is in the day-to-day, everything that goes on with this company. And I think having him more involved in this, when it comes to keeping people excited with just new product releases, product updates, what we're working on, what we've got up our sleeve, I that's probably more exciting for me than anything. And then it'll help fill a void in like the off season, you know, when we have gaps. Totally. And I think that's why the Home Turf Series has done so good.
Well, from my seat, it's like, I don't want to say who am I, but I've never really looked at myself as anyone of any importance. I mean, I love waterfowl hunting specifically, and then created this brand. I mean, Asher's been along for this almost the entire ride of this thing, gets huge credit for where this company has gone. But it's never really been about me being in the spotlight. I loved the waterfowl side, and then I really fell in love with the business side of thing, and then it's like two passions come together. And I guess this season, it's really what I enjoy to do, this home turf stuff. This is literally our home turf. It's less than an hour from my home. Come up here, have some fun, break some ground, make improvements, and then reap the benefits of it all. I mean, coming out here and hunting and shooting a limit is more valuable than going anywhere in the world and shooting a limit to me. I'd rather do it right here. I'm looking out over the cornfield right now, which is very cool. But that, and then sharing it with guests. I mean, allowing them. Sure. I mean, today, just as an example, was a blast.
Yeah,
the boys from Sumner are back there. We got a crowd in the back.
15, 20 guys up here.
Sumner guys are here dropping off Rip Gut. Jake's here. Carter. I mean, all the guys from the shop went out teal hunting this morning. Picked up Nate on the way. We grilled. Well, we made breakfast. We had, you know, smoked ribs. I'm a champion.
A little Smokies, but two-time champion. Yeah, you can say it.
But yeah, it's all
barbecue sauce on my shirt.
Yeah, that's funny.
Well, I think also the home turf side of things has brought, like, from my point of view, has brought a new passion to you from the waterfowl side. It's kind of been able to build on, okay, wow, like, I'm super into waterfowl hunting. I love the aspect of that, but now being able to manage my own property is, like, you know, another layer of the cake.
Yeah, well, this is the dream. I mean, I'm, you know, getting out of college, worshiping Tony Vandemore, Fred Zink, all these guys. I mean, Jeff Foyles, I love Fallen Skies and the whole thing.
Right.
And then, you know, 7-8 years after I start this, I'm eating lunch with Jeff Foyles. I'm rubbing elbows with, hell, the first property I bought in Sumner was from Tony Vandemore, which is like a lifelong idol. And here I am, a far cry from them, in my opinion. But, I mean, speaking to people and having a video or series that's kind of parallel to with what they've got, and all the while, the brand's humming in the background. So it's really, it's amazing. This is totally a dream come true.
Yeah, I totally agree. Let's shift gears here a little bit. We've got a lot in the works with Dive Bomb. This year is really a banner year for us. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on kind of where Dive Bomb's going. I know we've got a lot in the hopper in terms of new products, a new facility, Squad Fest 2025. I think there's a lot of cool stuff coming. So I think we should discuss that a little bit.
So as far as facilities go, we signed a lease to move us into a much larger facility. We've kind of been split under two roofs. We've had a main facility that, if you were at Squadcast 1, that's where it was hosted. But we literally blew the doors off of it. And we've done that as far as distribution and warehouse goes as well. So we've been under one roof, and then we actually enlisted a third-party logistics company. I would basically put them in the category of just third-party warehouse. So we basically rent by the square foot. And that's been great for us. It's allowed us to scale. It's allowed us to maintain cash flow. It's allowed us to basically come out of this COVID craziness where we've had this huge bubble in online retail sales.
Right.
Specifically in the outdoor world, golf, tennis, fishing, hunting, all those things exploded in COVID. And it's let things basically naturalize or mellow out. And now we've got a clear trajectory that we think of where we're headed as far as products and all that stuff, but mainly as far as what we need for warehouse space and fulfillment space. So we're moving. Everything's going to be under one roof at the beginning of 2025, and it's going to be spectacular. I mean, everything will run departmentally, seamlessly. I mean, operations, fulfillment, customer service, everything will be under one roof. Our marketing team predominantly has always been out of house. And, you know, typically they travel so much, and Asher's got things so dialed that, honestly, we talk, and you'd be probably surprised how infrequently we talk, but we understand each other, which is beautiful. But when you go to the next warehouse, we will have a gigantic showroom. It'll be 6-7 times the size of our current showroom, which will be spectacular. We've got some guys enlisted for architecture. They're going to build some internal structures in the showroom. Big showroom, lots of products. And then the office space is also custom build out, so it'll be very cool to have all the guys working shoulder to shoulder for the most part right there under one roof. So yeah, as far as facility goes, 2025 is going to be a big year for us. And then as a company as a whole, you know, when someone asks me what I focus on, it's obviously growth. And when I think of growth, I think of two things, and most everything typically follows behind this. And I don't mean that in any negative sense. It's marketing and new product development. So those are the two main heavy investors for us. So Asher's side of marketing, we've got a new guy, Cody Orr, who's here, and he's doing analysis and statistics and all sorts of crazy data crunching stuff that's going to take, you know, our budget and our content and hopefully propel us to the next level. And then our new product side, we've got Tommy, and then our white knight is Philson, Philly McGee. Who actually got lost on the way here.
Got lost on the way here, got the FJ stuck in a pile of gravel. I don't know how you do that.
It wasn't a pile of gravel. He was turned horizontal on a steep hill and thought he was stuck. But
can you reenact his pull on the crazy quill?
Yeah, what's his shot call?
So Phil does not shoot much, and Phil's I love Phil to death. He pulls up his gun and he mounts it and he says, "Safety off, ready, pull." And then the funny thing was when he forgot to turn his safety off, he goes, wait, safety's still on. Like everyone, like anyone had cared. It was just, it was funny. But new product development and marketing. And then if we get specific on the new product development side, we've had a real push in the soft goods side of things. So Trudge boots have been a huge success. Waders have been a huge success and all the soft goods stuff. Dry line bags are great for us. The quality, the daily, you know, application and strength of those products, along with the price, have gone a long ways. And then all the wearables, you know, Airweight is arguably the best jacket I've ever worn, and that's unbiased, believe it or not. And then the heavy duty stuff like the bruisers, the bibs, and the heavy duty shell. Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why we're not flooding this market with everything at once, and everyone's been asking us for this bib over the last couple of years, but these products are well thought out. Every product make is very, very well thought out.
Yeah.
I mean, there's 2Ds involved. Some most cases in the physical products, 3Ds, starts with a 3D model and it's shot over to 3D printing and then it goes to a 2D and then it goes to, you know, prefab tooling and then pre-production sampling and then production sampling and then we get production. And typically when we run something in production, the volume of those products is on the lower side. So when Asher and I were running this stuff early on, we'd have what we thought was a sizable quantity, and we'd release the quantity and it'd sell out. And it was like, we just kind of shot ourselves in the foot because we didn't realize how much hype was behind this product.
Right. Yeah.
And people didn't believe that we had enough product to actually sell and sell out. So it's kind of a balancing act between how much do we order in the first go, what's our actual demand, and then, like, you know, how much do we want to actually invest, not to scare you off a first-gen product because they're all really well vetted.
Yeah.
But you just learn so much by having 3,000 people touch it as compared to 10.
Well, and that's totally true. You know, like we take almost all of our product, you know, comments and questions and all that stuff from the Facebook group and our consumers. And we really try to adjust the product based on what the consumer is needing. So we don't, you know, as much as we can test and do all those things, we've got it in 20 people's hands. You know, as soon as you start bringing that product to market and start learning from these guys who, you know, may use it in some application that we never even thought of, we don't know. But one thing I was going to have you touch on a little bit longer was the bibs. Can you tell us a little bit more about the bibs? Like, what makes you excited about them? What's the cool features? Is there anything you can tell us before those release?
The bibs are made from an incredible membrane made from Toray, which they make everything from materials for socks to stealth jets. I mean, it's a Japanese materials company. We use Dermazax, which is our main membrane, in that, and then it's three-layer. Our waders are four. Three allows them to breathe better. So it's basically a sandwich membrane. They're tough. They're tough. They're stretchable. They're seamed, hot seamed, welded seams. They've got basically the same G-loop system that's on our wader is basically on the shoulders for those. Super comfortable, tons of pockets. And then we've got this mannequin. It was a really, really expensive mannequin, and we actually have a 3D side of it. So there's a physical mannequin and there's a 3D side. And Bowie, the guy behind the camera right now, he and I took the last set of bibs, and we said, these look kind of dumpy. Like, these are awesome bibs, materials, specs, the whole thing. How do we make this look like something you could wear to a club?
A club.
A club? A club? I don't know. Clurb. That may be a stretch, but what I'm saying is, like, these are cool. The fit and contour of these bibs, is, but Bowie's nodding at me, is cool.
Like, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean,
they'll look good.
Get birds look like you took a dump in your pants.
You don't want a big saggy butt in your in your bibs. No. You just don't want it.
Yeah, so you know, and the shell came out last year, and the material lead times are really long on these. So, you know, we issue these orders 8 months, 12 months prior, and then by the time something releases, and we've hyped it up, and Asher's team does such a great job that the demand is completely blown out. So I'm afraid that when we get these bibs in, they're going to sell out really, really fast. So. Yeah. Before we even get these bibs in, we're already going to be placing material orders for 2025. So
smart.
We're going to heavily invest in all of this line. I mean, the decoy side's incredible, but this soft goods side of things, I mean, it's been a whole new territory for us because we've been in it for a while and we've kind of been consuming it slowly. But I really see that's where Dive Bomb is growing.
Yeah.
And then if you want me to bore you for like two or three more seconds.
No, keep
going. The decoy side of things. We were founded on silhouettes. Silhouettes were the backbone of the brand. The U upside down stake silhouette, I'm going to go ahead and claim it. I mean.
Claim it.
There was an outlaw. There was
real geese
with the old wooden stake. Neither of those utilized that U stake. And then there was one other guy in the industry that had what he dubbed an H stake. And it was literally a yard sign stake that he slid a decoy on, and I don't want to say we ran head to head, but I mean he was the only other guy kind of around when I started, and slowly but surely an option became our stake, and then here we go, we're 8, 9, 10 brands in. Doesn't, producing effectively what they think is the same thing. But if I get into the weeds and look at these products specifically on the socks, and then, you know, the steel that's spec'd on our stuff, all this stuff, when you see these new products come out, there's just subtle things that these competitors miss that we've learned over the last 10, 12, 15
for
years.
For sure.
I mean, the steel, in the stake system and the silhouettes, the way that the sock stake is actually bonded with the injection molded handle. If you dissect some competitors that effectively copied ours verbatim, they've missed these subtle things that make a huge difference that we've seen fail in the field and that we've adapted. So when we talk about our basically improvement process system, or what we strive for is a continuous improvement process. So perfection is, in my opinion, unattainable, but it's the process of continuous improvement that continually betters yourself to make a better product for everyone.
Well, aside from the decoys, what about the standard brown bag?
The STB. Standard brown bag is the most mundane name for a product you could ever imagine, but it is the standard.
It is.
We were basically, it was a silhouette bag, it was whatever bag.
But everybody before then was using the satchels with the holes in them.
Yep. Those are terrible.
They were terrible.
No structure. You know,
steak stuck out the bottom.
Just the bag standing upright and not having to hold it open like it's a flimsy garbage bag, trying to fill it up with leaves was such a game changer. And the foam inside of our bag is closed cell. It's not absorbing. And the whole style, all the straps, all of basically everywhere it was sewn together was a development of a field proven process. And then all of a sudden, here come all of these guys with bags that look just like ours. But I promise you, if you put me down in front of these bags, I could point out the differences in the bags.
Really, really quick, Asher, I wanna ask Cody. So I think one thing that really interests me, and we're going off agenda really quick. One thing that interests me is your background in quality control. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't know about you. And so touch on that a little bit. Touch on like where you came from, what the background is in that. Because I know the quality control side of Dive Bomb is something that is not really shown to the public, but is a really heavy part of our business.
Yeah. So that and the new product development side are like very, very under the radar.
For sure.
My background was in manufacturing. I worked for my father right out of college. I graduated on a Friday and I started working on a Monday. And it was basically, hey, here's your salary, which was nothing spectacular at the time. Here's my business. Apply yourself and fill in the gaps and improve where you can. And that was basically it. And honestly, the direction from my father was don't fuck it up. I mean, it was it. So it was
not a lot of direction.
No, it was a very stern, don't fuck it up.
Don't fuck it up.
And, you know, I piss and moan for however long I work for him, but just a little segue, like, it was the best thing that's ever happened to me. That tough love kind of piece, like, don't fuck it up. There's a lot riding on this, you know. But to focus on quality specifically, I've applied a lot of what I learned from his business to where we are today. And it's processes and controls and then equipment that tests it and calibration of all that stuff. And some of that's crazy, but I mean, on silhouettes, we have a glare meter. I mean, we push something to it and we measure the reflectivity of the product. And if it passes, it passes. We've got hardness measuring. We've got optical comparators for measuring distances like holes to holes. We've got
something for stainless steel.
So there's in the stainless steel world, there's a whole lot going on there. There's 301, 303, 304. And then what we spec everything to is 316. It's got the highest nickel content of all the stainless steels, unless you go to like 4 series and get crazy and all that stuff. But you can really tell the difference when you put it in within a saltwater atmosphere, right?
Yeah.
So when you go to our Mars seat and you see anything that looks shiny, like metallic, that's not coated for a reason. It actually is coated, and it's passivation. And it's an anti-rust coating that's done to citric acid on the stainless steel parts to prevent corrosion. And I'm really nerding out right now. But
no, I think it's good. I think it's good.
All of this stuff, like our decoy rigs, we do load ratings. We obviously test if a 4 ounce weight is marked for, and we sell it as a 4 ounce rig. What should it weigh?
4 ounces.
Minimum.
Yeah.
Right? I guarantee the internet these days, I guarantee you there's been 24 people out there that go clip, put it on a scale.
For sure.
That want to blast us.
For sure.
You know? But it's just little things like that. And then when you get into the soft good line of things like permeability, abrasion, we've got we've got spray tanks, all those little stickers that pick up on humidity. We put those all over our mannequin. We cover them with our rain jackets. And then we test things. So everything you're getting from us is tested. And then if, God forbid, you get something that doesn't feel meets the standard that we project ourselves on, you call customer service and we take care of you. That's one thing that's very, very underrated in this world, in my opinion, is customer service, attentiveness. Asher's taken that to heart. He's been on the customer service side of things. He's fielded those calls. He knows what it's like to deal with those people and how important it is not only to convert them one time, to convert them 8 times. I mean, we're looking to capture a customer. That's number one. And then we're looking to retain that customer.
Yeah.
So gaining a customer is very hard.
Yep.
And losing a customer is
super easy.
Very, very easy.
Yeah.
So those are some things we really look for.
No, that's great. I think that's an important part of Dive Bomb that doesn't really get shown.
Yeah, often. In my head, all those things when he was talking about when he said he was nerding out, it made me think of all these reasons why we probably have done so well for so many years, just because the attention to detail is so.
Yeah, I agree.
It keeps it tight. I mean, if you talk to Jake or Jordan, anybody that's involved in our marketing, they're like, man, the smallest stuff, like things that, you know, a lot of people I think would say, man, that's not a big deal. It doesn't matter. Well, it's like, well, we're looking at the big picture here. You know, if we keep it tight on the small stuff, we know we're always going to keep it tight on the big stuff. So yeah, there's a standard that's set that always has to be met. And if you fall short of that standard, well, try again. Let's do it again.
And that was super obvious to me.
But I mean, that's
me.
The
yeah.
way this guy is, yeah. you know? Yeah. And you know, I that's definitely in my background, but it's gotten even stronger, you know, having worked with him for so many years. But he was, you know, while he's sitting there talking, I'm thinking, like, that's you can't always put your finger on why you have such a good relationship with somebody, or because he wasn't lying. We don't really talk that much. Sometimes I'll call him, like,
what's up, man?
Like, I don't hear from you very much. But we just kind of understand each other, even without talking, kind of know mm-hmm. like what's going on. And yeah, it's funny. I'm, you know, sitting here looking at Jake while I'm saying, you know, talking about these little things. Jake and Jordan have done such a great job. All of our guys in marketing have, but they keep it tight, you know, and well, you got to.
No, I totally agree. And that's something that I learned coming in, you know, fairly new, coming up to Game Fair and spending, you know, 3 days with Jake, Jordan, and Asher, and learning from the marketing side of things, like, man, this is significantly more than like throwing something up on an Instagram post and, you know, posting this or posting that or making this video or making this reel. Like, there is 100x times the things that you think about that Asher's got going on in his brain that to be honest with you, I had no idea. I'd been a consumer and I learned and I watched and all that stuff.
For those who don't know who this is, he's a MLB pitcher. Very, very, very humble beginnings and literally ground his way up into the MLB, pitched, got rings, had a great career, and he actually started working for Dive Bomb before he was the number one guy
when he was still playing
on payroll. Playing. I think he was fielding our Instagram and stuff from the dugout. I remember when
literally I'd go in between innings and try to catch up on DMs. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Definitely doing stuff I wasn't supposed to be doing.
That's amazing.
I think he started for like $200 or $300 a month.
Yeah.
And he ran it for 3 months, good for him. And he came to me and he said, listen, I either got to drop this or my wife's going to divorce me. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, well, I only see her a couple times, you know, a month, maybe. Kelly, who's tough as can be and great, great woman. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, this is, you've got something here. Like, you've really, really got something. Like, I'm not saying this. He had a great page beforehand and that's how we met. But he's like, you really got something. Now I'm going to need more money. And I'm like, well, how much? He's like, $500 a month. I'm like, done.
As fast as you done. Could. Done. Yes, sealed. Done.
No, it's been awesome. Every step of the way, you know, it's been awesome.
When did you know? How did you know he had something? What was the, do you have a defining moment of like, dude, there's something here?
You know, there was never, I don't think, a defining moment, but I remember it started growing pretty fast. And I noticed that and I think he was maybe kind of half-ass handling the emails or maybe Blair. And I remember he came to me and he's like, I think it started to get to be a little bit overwhelming. And he was like, man, how much more would it take for you to handle these emails? And I was like, I mean, a couple $100 a month, yeah. You know? And so I started noticing that the emails were really picking up, even to a volume that, you know, started to become a little bit difficult to cover. You know, at night I'd come home from a ball game and answer emails and then I remember it wasn't too much terribly longer later. And he's like, what if we set up a phone where like people could call you and talk to you and order decoys through you on the phone?
I think that was your
get
idea.
Advice. I think it was your idea. But either way, there were a lot of calls coming through. I mean, I remember I was in Long Island. I want to say that was 2017. Or maybe 18. And I remember I shared an upstairs room with two other guys. And I remember a guy was like, dude, you got to go somewhere if you're going to be taking all these hunting calls all the time about giving people advice and asking what should I buy and how many do I need and how do these work? How does this flat decoy work?
Right.
You know, and people that follow the Facebook group, they know that we've never claimed, obviously, to create the silhouette decoy. It's been around since the 1930s after they outlawed live decoys.
Right,
they started using tin and, I mean, cutting out outlines of tin. That we've never claimed that. But I will say that Dive Bomb 100% created the resurgence of the silhouette decoy.
Sure.
We created the excitement, and it wasn't. I don't think it was by anything that we necessarily were doing anything that crazy. I mean, obviously the H take was awesome, the standard brown bag, but I think we just showed people that you could still have a ton of success in the field without having
silhouette
to take out, you know, a loan to buy a decoy spread. Like, hey guys, like if you do this, you can still be successful, and look how easy it is. Yep. Throw this stuff in the bed of your truck with a layout blind. Like, show how easy it is. Show how portable. You can walk in. You can go a long ways.
Throw them in your Camry.
And I think we just showed the different ways that you can use them, and the advantages, highlighted the advantages like others hadn't done before.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of it's just timing. I mean, with modernization, like the internet and the availability to go out and produce something on your cell phone and then pop it out to the general public almost immediately. Like, silhouettes were around, right? Obviously we discussed that earlier, but to be able to show the success of the silhouette and then for people to see that success with their own eyes and then take a look at the price tag and the portability and then all this stuff on the back end that the consumer really doesn't understand, like how inexpensive it is in the decoy world to get decoys to the United States. And then on the forward side, how economical it is to ship out five dozen decoys, which
humongous.
I could hold under my arms, and five dozen full bodies would take up half this room. I mean, it's just, And then, you know, to expand on the timing piece, I mean, direct to consumer, that's something we've prided ourselves on since day one. And I'd like to say I'm this visionary. I'm far from a Jeff Bezos, but it was born out of necessity. I mean, we did not have the capital, the inventory, the structure, any of that stuff to go to a big name brand and say, hey, buy our stuff and sell it for us. We were forced to create our own avenue or outlet that was within our budget and scope, and that was direct to consumer, and it just happened to align. I mean, the stars literally aligned for us. It was the social media stuff started booming.
Yep.
Personally, you know, the Asher piece was huge for me, and then the direct to consumer was our only outlet, but it happens to be, in my opinion, the best outlet, and it allows us to maintain so much control. I mean, it's just beautiful. It's a beautiful form of business, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with all that. I think the business update's great. I think this is something that people really like to listen to and hear, you know, your side of the story. And that's something that hasn't been, you know, well spread previously. But one thing I want to get to, you know, as we're ramping into, you know, it's what, September 16th today, whatever, 14th it says on the screen. You know, we had early teal season in Missouri. Asher and the road crew have been, they've got some guys teal hunting. They've been early Canada hunting. So let's segue this into a little bit of hunting. If Asher wants to discuss a little bit about what he's seen so far, I know you've had some great hunts. I know you had some hardships. So Asher, why don't you tell us a little bit about like what's been going on the road? What have you seen so far? You know, it's still early, but you know, what are the early signs?
Yeah. Being perfectly honest, this has been one of the slower starts to a season that I think, maybe we've ever had.
Were you
since I've started traveling?
Were you expecting that?
No, absolutely not.
Seems based like everybody was hyping the season up, right?
Based on the talks from everybody, it was, and I say was. I mean, man, we're talking about what is it?
8 days, nine, whatever.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
I say
small,
was.
Yeah.
We ain't to the good stuff yet.
Right.
But we are off to a slower start than normal.
Yeah.
We've put together some really, really nice hunts. I mean, opening weekend in Wisconsin, we had a really solid opening day, and then I struggled for a couple days. You guys had an awesome teal hunt here on opener, shot 10 limits. We went on a little freelance deal. Myself, our good friend Travis Bills, had Jake behind the camera there, and we had some good hunts, and we ran into one really, really good hunt. But I mean, the miles that we were putting on, I mean, starting at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and hoping by 8 that we had a hunt for the next morning,
right.
it was tough. And there wasn't very much short grain. And, you know, obviously no corn is off. And when you found some short grain, you would find some birds, but you would find like 40, 50 in every field. It wasn't like you're finding, you know, a good 150, 200 to get
you
really excited. I don't know.
Was there a lot of water on the landscape?
Yeah. It's a pretty wet year, and the ducks have looked really nice when we've been out. The ducks have looked nice. I'm hearing some excellent reports from Canada. Awesome duck reports. Specs. I've heard specs are on the move out through Alberta and some folks I've talked to in Saskatchewan. So it's super early. I think the guys did okay in Louisiana this morning. They were holding a ton of birds. And then they had a pretty good storm system come through, and I think that might have thrown them off a little bit. But overall, it's hot, man. I mean, I know it is. This is typically a pretty warm time of year, but you can run into some really cool days. And it's been pretty much downright hot. So the birds have gotten weird. I mean, a lot of the best feed we found on the last day, one we got turned down on and one we got where we put the really good one together, were both in pastures. They weren't even in short grain fields. And 2 days, what did they not come off, Jake, till like after 9 o'clock? Early honkers didn't even start coming off till after 9 o'clock.
Interesting.
So it was just a little bit weird. And I've been hearing from some guys that have been chasing some of these early September honkers that things have just been a little bit different. But it's early. I'm very optimistic that we're going to have an awesome season. But it has been, you know, being fully transparent, it's definitely been a little bit slower than the last couple of years.
Yeah. And what you're on your are you, have you had you've had two trips so far?
We've gone on
your third trip here.
Let's see. This I guess was our third trip.
It's your third trip here.
Yeah, two full trips. But yeah, it's going to come together. I have no doubt. It's going to come together and, yeah, it's, just timing. We'll get some cool winds are going to start blowing. Things are going to cool off. It's going to rain and things are going to get better.
So you mentioned our teal hunt here at King's Bend. It was great. Opening morning was phenomenal. We were holding a lot of birds. We had held those birds for what, 7, 8, 9 days, something like that. We had a 20 mile an hour north wind, but it dropped from about 80 down to 40 that evening. But the teal stuck around. It was a phenomenal shoot. But one thing I want to kind of go into is discussing King's Bend. What's the plan for this year? You know, we've done a lot of these home turf videos. A lot of that was focused on the 203, mm-hmm. obviously, and maybe this is a great time to talk about, you know, King's Bend and the 203 and what those two properties look like and how those are shared within the farm.
Sure. King's Bend, we've got a series on YouTube, Home Turf. It's details. Basically, the build out of this piece, we dubbed the 203, which is 203 acres, 1 mile northeast of KB proper. So KB proper has the house and about 350 acres, but the 203 we developed from a straight ag field that hadn't changed hands in over 100 years. We created a levee system, and it's basically a flooded ag impoundment. So last year we ran straight corn. We combined out what we took to harvest or took to the co-op and left the remainder standing. At the end of the season, we typically see about half of the yield come back once the ducks are eating and attrition or whatever else falls off of it. But that's our ag impound. It's very, very productive tract. I mean, it's where I want to be specifically when it starts to get cold mid to late November, but it's very productive. But when we get back to the house, it's very diverse. It's a very cool place. The house is elevated up. It's up 19 feet, and that's to get it out of flood of 93.
And it was flooded all the way up to the top, 19 foot,
so
basically.
I think of what drove the previous owners of this place out was they had a flood in 15 and a flood in 19. And the floods down here, this is a big time. Major flood.
I mean, absolutely.
When you see this house and you look from the ground up to the deck, you think, how in the world is it possible that water was crashing in on the deck, basically coming in through these windows that are just past me? But it's once you reach that levee, it's like a beer bong.
Yeah.
I mean, you lift it up and there she goes, kind of thing. But I think the previous owners who built this and originally developed the smaller piece of this got fed up with the flood and said, we want to go our own ways, Lake of the Ozarks and whatever the hell they ended up. But so bought this, we refurbed the house. The house is, I think, very, very, very nice. It was nicer than my own home that's closer to the warehouse. I love spending time out here, but we've got a WRP track that's 100 acres. And then that's going to be basically our northern refuge over here. We've got some corn in there. We're limited by the amount of corn we can put in there, but moist soil, smart weed, millet, invertebrates, those things. We flooded early for teal. That teal hunt we had was spectacular.
Yep.
And then I actually purchased another piece to the south. So our plan this year is to refuge our north WRP track, which is 100 acres, and then refuge approximately 100 acres to the south, and then hunt everything in between. And that's a kind of a fragile piece, because when you try to refuge ducks, I guess the old saying is seven to make them, one to break
lose
them.
Yeah, yep. One to break so them, yep.
Take 7 years to create a refuge and one effectively to ruin it. And when I say ruin it, I mean like total devastation. But if you do want a refuge, you have to not bump the birds. You cannot be around them. If they get spooked twice, they just don't come back. That's the saying. But our idea here is to run traffic between a north refuge and a south refuge and hunt in between. And it's just a cool place to congregate other than that with everyone at the warehouse. I mean, it's very difficult. Hunting public piece is very difficult here. I mean, population in St. Louis is... Greater St. Louis is over 2 million, and the public tracks we have are thin. I mean, the success rate there is also very thin.
Yeah.
And a lot of this property, you know, I guess I'm guilty, is private land that's developed, and I'm blessed to be able to do that. I know not everyone is, and a big piece of it is taking guys from the warehouse who work really hard all week long that love waterfowling, and it's a huge sacrifice for someone to come in and say, I love waterfowling, I want to be a part of Dive Bomb, but hey, listen, you're going to be sitting out.
Your busiest time of the year is during waterfowl season, right?
If you wanted to hunt all day, every day of season, you either need to be a fireman or you need to be a landscaper. I mean,
go work in ag, but, do something like that.
Yeah, so the idea of getting the employees and friends and family out here to take advantage of this and then all the while create content such as the YouTube stuff is just awesome, and then testing products and having Asher and his crew come in, stay and create content. It's just, I love it here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really good point, is the for friends and family, it seems like the doors are open here, especially weekends, that kind of stuff. It's let's get people through, let's get people hunting, let's enjoy the time, let's smoke some ribs, come up here, have a couple beers, hang out, shoot the shit, that kind of thing. Other than, you know, developing the South refuge effectively, we've got the refuge on the north. What else? What other changes have we done to King's Bend this year, or maybe the 203? What did we learn from last year? You know, last year was our first time hunting.
Right.
Really, the 203, obviously. What did we learn from that we're kind of bringing into next year?
So 203 was literally a pancake. There was nothing there. We built all the infrastructure, put water on it, and the crucial thing, in my opinion, before you go dump, you know, $20,000 or however many thousands of dollars it is for a pit. Some of those prefab pits are like 35 plus K, which is just insane. Before you go do that, you need to evaluate the tract with water and how the ducks use it. So if we would have gone out and just arbitrarily put pits in the ground, we'd have been off.
Yeah, I mean, for sure.
We took A-frames from our inventory. We put self-tappers in there. And before we even did that, we used chairs and stools and things like that to try to determine where the birds wanted to finish. And we experimented, basically we segmented the pool into three tracks, northwest, southwest, and then an east pool. And we ran around in those pools and we just kept coming back to the same spot that worked day in and day out. And what we do to try to make things more comfortable and more convenient, obviously, is we put in permanent pits.
Yeah.
And the placement of those pits is basically probably the biggest learning aspect of the 203 last year.
Yeah, I mean, we spent just like you said, we spent a full season basically mobile.
In this neck of the woods, no doubt about it, I doubt there's anyone that was anywhere close to as mobile and the tactical approach that we took to our hunting last year. Everybody, for the most part, I don't want to step on any toes, but there's the pit. We're going to go out, we're going to throw our 5 dozen or 10, or maybe they don't even pick up the decoys.
Yep.
And that's just where we hunt, because that's just the way we've always done it, or that's the way this place operates. And that's the exact opposite of what we did.
Yeah, we did the total opposite. Now it was a significantly more amount of work per hunt.
But next, this coming
paid
year,
off in spades.
Ideally, is there's not a lot of work. We're going to pull our decoys every night. Birds get smart to them. There's no doubt. I mean, specifically around the house, you can tell that the birds get accustomed to the decoys, and they'll actually land away from
for them. Sure, for sure.
But the addition of the south track, and then I'm going to see. I think we had a lot of volunteer corn out there. You know, our combine is only so efficient. I'm sure there was a lot of corn that was just left after combining. I think those birds were getting after, and I'm curious to see how they react to the soybean crop that's kind of mixed in with the corn this year.
Yeah, so we planted corn and we stripped beans basically. So the water is going to be the beans, right? So we're going to harvest beans. We're going to leave all the standing corn, and and that'll be there for the season. Then after season, we'll go through and shell corn, pick corn, whatever.
And it's my understanding that a bean does the same thing as a duck as it does to you. What does a bean do to you? Exactly. And then as far as a bean that's inundated or underwater, a bean lasts less than 30 days in corn or moist soil stuff, smart weed, millet, they last for approximately 90 days.
Right, right. Last year, the end of season last year, had a long conversation with the Polaris mechanic. We had two track machines out there at the 203. They were great. They were great for what we were using them for. I would say we probably worked them a little harder than they should have been worked. So we've switched tactics a little bit going into this season. I think we'll use the track machines obviously early season while we're waiting for the pool to get to full pool. But talk to us a little bit about the idea behind the boats of the 203. What's the thought process there? Obviously behind the side. Besides the fact of we were ruining Polaris.
So the ruining the Polaris thing. So I'm notoriously hard on stuff. I mean, everyone in the room's probably chuckling. Go ahead and let yourself laugh. I'm hard on things. My maintenance really, I'm this quality guy, but maintenance really isn't my vocabulary. I just like to run it and then kind of pick up the pieces later. But we had the track rangers and we ran them really hard. And when we had a friend pick them up to do real maintenance on them, he called me and said, you're a jackass. I've never seen more bearings, more water.
Hey, we ruined them.
Yeah, I mean, besides leaving the gas cap off, I mean, that was that was not very bright. But so we were very hard on them. Early season, it's the only way to traverse out there when you've got daylighting water and water building the pool. But to focus on specifically what you asked, when we created that pool, we obviously had to get the dirt from somewhere, and we created borrow ditch system. So that's basically evacuating dirt from one place and piling it up in another place to create a levee system. And that inevitably creates deep runs or tracks inside of the levees. And this year we have built a boathouse, and we are going to run shallow water outboard motors through the place. And we've got a couple reapers, and that's our plan. So we've got some slips, covered slips. The north side is covered. So hopefully to cut down on that prevailing wind, and we'll kind of just see how these dishes work for us this year. We might have to go back in next year and make them a little deeper in spots. And then one main thing to do is figure out, you know, how and where we're traversing, and then make screens. So willow breaks, you know, you can propagate a willow. You cut them in foot-long segments and stick them in the ground. And if it's moist enough, they'll grow a whole new tree. It's like a miracle. It's incredible. But
and that's the propagation that you guys have done throughout the rest of Kings Bend proper, right? Is putting willows in certain spots to keep down on foot traffic or Polaris traffic or headlights off of the highway or anything along those lines.
Several reasons. The predominantly down here, it's like ass backwards from Arkansas. Arkansas is green timber, hardwoods, tons of cover. I mean, aerial cover from predators, from people, from thermocline. So birds that are under cover, out of wind, those sorts of things, they retain their energy and have to eat less and travel less and just have a more relaxing life. And that's what we're trying to encourage. So I would imagine, you know, 200 years ago, this was great prairie and it was filled with willows and filled with, there are still oak bottoms down here and those things. And we're trying to bring that back in places where we feel like it matters most. So we've got oaks scattered throughout. We're creating breaks and screens, which is basically to keep ducks from seeing you in places that are sensitive, like coming over the hill here into the property. Headlights inevitably flash. Our presence at the farmhouse here has a negative impact. I mean, if you're gone for a week, you'll notice all the birds are around the house because there's fresh food and fresh water. But the second people start coming in for the weekend, they push out and they move to the other end away from people. They just flat out don't like people. The less they see you, the more protective they feel they are, the better off you are.
Yeah, in general. For sure. Asher, I think there's obviously value in us being able to have Kings Bend Farm to hunt and enjoy and do all that stuff. But touching on the marketing side of things, value of Kings Bend to you obviously seems like it's past the hunting side of things. I mean, there's multiple times where you'll come up here and, you know, not even shoot anything or just, you know, do whatever you guys do. So talk a little bit about like you know, obviously one of your favorite parts of King's Bend is being able to hunt and enjoy and do all those things and hang out with the guys. But there's got to be a second aspect to you that there's value of this place for marketing.
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredible property. You know, there's a lot of different features to get some really, really good content. I mean, just like today, for example, we've got some new wader colors coming, and we shot some colors that look really, really nice in the corn. You know, that tan looks really good in the corn. Well, green's not really a corn color. Well, that's okay. There's places that we can find out here to where the green looks good and where the brown looks good. The tall trudge boots that you guys have seen on our website, you know, that the green is not really a color that we want to get out in, you know, a really, really tan environment. It's more of like a bottoms type of color. And, you know, there's a nice bottom over here that we shot some stuff in. We got the tan. We get out here in the corn or in the WRP, the brown, pretty neutral color.
Right.
You know, you can kind of showcase that anywhere. But it's an incredible property with a lot of different features that whenever we do have a kind of a load of marketing stuff come in at once or things that need to be done, this is a great place to come and get the guys together, or whether it's one of the guys or the whole team, to come together and really, really spend a hard couple days grinding some stuff out that, might be a little bit more challenging to get in a controlled, just be in a little bit more of a controlled setting as opposed to a hunt where you're kind of trying to mix it in between the way the flow of the hunt or during the hunt or after the hunt, which that can be challenging sometimes. I mean, if we're freelancing, it's a little bit easier. But, you know, if you're hunting somewhere and they've got customers that paid a lot of money, but we
want to stop the whole hunt.
Yeah, we've got
a
certain light that we want, but we want to get a guy running in with birds. Well, how does it work when birds start coming off the roost? A lot of the times, you better get your ass back to the blind because there a lot of times there's more coming. Well, somebody didn't pay $450 a gun to have us out in the decoys taking pictures,
farting around with your camera. Yeah,
so it's an incredible property for getting controlled content for marketing. And the people that we hunt with throughout the season are great. Like, they know the deal. They know we're professionals. We'll never interfere with a hunt.
Right.
We know when we can do stuff and when we can't. And the people that we hunt with are awesome hosts all the time. And most of the time they're asking us, what can we do for you? How can we make this easier for you? But naturally, you know, we're just like, hey, man, you just do your thing. Like, we're not
right.
here. We'll figure it
right.
out. But yeah, it works out great having this place. You know, like right now we're pretty jammed up, man. We got a lot going on. I mean, we're doing ads on streaming platforms, and we're doing a lot of, we're refreshing creatives on Meta, and that doesn't even begin to touch our day-to-day marketing
right.
on Instagram and Facebook, the Facebook group, Snapchat, TikTok. There's a lot of platforms, and a lot of these platforms have different policies and what you can show and what you can't show. Like our schedule, you've got some stuff, you've got to make a different version for TikTok.
Yeah. So are you shooting separate clips of
Absolutely.
The same thing for different platforms?
Absolutely. You can't, I mean, I shot yesterday, Jake, we shot a video on a pretty cool video, simple tips under 60 seconds to make you help you harvest more birds this season. Really, really cool. Well, naturally, it grabs people's eyes when you got a pile, you know, handful of birds
for
and
sure.
on the ground. I mean, you got 3 seconds to captivate.
You got tips
somebody.
To harvest more birds, and you got birds in your hands.
That's right.
right.
What do we do when we're on TikTok and Instagram? Reels?
Yeah,
your fingers
You're
like
scrolling.
This. You better catch somebody's attention. You got about 2 seconds, and so it's a lot easier to catch a waterfowl hunter's attention when you got birds and decoys and a good background. Well, TikTok, sometimes you got to get a little bit more creative. You can't show dead birds. You can't show a gun. There's things you just can't do on that platform. So we've got to shoot content according to the platform that it's going to go on. So there's a lot that goes into it. As nice as it would be for me to sit here and say all these things happen organically, natural in a hunt, it just don't work that way. There's a lot of things that you have to stage, and it's got to be controlled, or you can't showcase a product the right way a lot of times if you're trying to just do it on the fly. You'll never do that product justice or the quality that it deserves. Now, can you do it sometimes? Does it work out sometimes where it's just like magic? Of course.
For sure.
It happens, but it's a lot easier to make those things happen when you've got a plan for how you're going to make it happen. And this is a great property to be able to do that.
Yeah.
To go back to the very original question.
Yeah, for sure. I think it touches on the diversity of Kings Bend, which is something that's super special. You know, we're in a historic region in the confluence here. And, you know, historically it's been, you know, a row crop production place, and it's row crop farms, flooded corn, and that's kind of been the king. And so having something like Kings Bend that's, you know, diversified between moist soil, and you've got, you know, a creek that runs through it with some bottomlands in it, and you've still got your production ag and flooded ag fields. I think it adds to a, you know, there's some specialness
to
it.
The house for classic lifestyle stuff, you know, go out here on the porch,
but
put your binoculars up, go hop on a side by side and a tractor, and you're just your day to day clothes.
I just can't help but think this guy is timber Arkansas through and through.
100%.
He sees this landscape, and it's just might not be his forte.
Where are the trees?
Where are the trees?
I know. I just got to hop on the Ranger and go hit them right. Yeah, here. That's right. My go-to spot every time I come out here.
He likes to be in the spots
100%
where we are effectively not.
Where we're not.
Yeah. I cut my teeth hunting flooded corn impoundments at Grand Pass and Eagle Bluffs in Missouri spots. So I just got to imagine this might not be his forte. But I mean, if you were to hunt anywhere, if you have 3 days to live, where are you going to hunt?
I mean, I'm going to be in the bottoms in Arkansas somewhere.
Who are you going to be with? You don't have to say me.
Huh?
You don't have to say me.
Oh, if only. I'd be in the bottoms, but you'd be with me. Okay, fair. You'd be standing the oak tree over from me.
There you go.
No business talk. You know what? I actually like talking business with you.
Yeah.
Now, people,
I think that's where a lot of great things happen.
I try to stifle or muffle my business talk outside of business. But it's really enjoyable, like going to have a beer with or you, Nathan, or Asher and I, when you talk about the business, and it's not because you have to, it's because you want to.
You want to.
It's a really cool thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. As we kind of wrap this up, Asher, touch on some cool stuff you've got. Do you have any cool trips? You know, I know everybody's super interested on where the hell you guys go. What are you shooting? What are you looking forward to? You know, we know Jake's interested in little geese. What excites you?
Man, all the trips are cool. I'm a duck hunter.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a duck hunter. I had a blast yesterday. We rocked the big Canada geese. I mean, up close and personal. Layout blind, super high wind, kept the decoys really, really tight.
That's awesome.
We rarely do that, but when you get a 25 mile an hour wind and a ridiculous high,
it's perfect.
You just shoot them right in your face. And I had a blast doing that. But I'm a duck hunter. I mean, if it's got a green head on it, that's what I want to shoot.
Yeah.
But man, we got a lot of cool trips planned. Love shooting specs. I mean, the combo stuff in Alberta, like, come on, you kidding me? Like, in the same field, you kill big geese, little geese, mallards, pintails, you know, maybe a widgeon, specs, snows,
yeah,
blues, whatever, you know, Rossies.
And the volume of birds.
It's just crazy. Come on. You don't know. It's like you got your calls and your lanyard. It's like,
what do I whale on?
And then here comes some mallards. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
A six pack of specs. Here they come. You know, so that's just awesome. And not that I don't ever want to fast forward through anything, but September, you know, it's probably not my favorite month, you know, because for the most part you're chasing big greasy local Canada geese,
early geese,
and that's just not, as an Arkansas guy, that's not really
doesn't scratch
thing.
The itch.
No, but I love it. It's waterfowl hunting, and I love what I do. I love showcasing that with other people. Like, I loved making the video for like the tips. I loved getting with Jake and getting different shots, like scouting, and got on speakerphone on the Bluetooth and talking about stuff that's relatable to people that I know are going to be watching it. So I find love in other things other than just being worried about, God, we got to go shoot honkers today.
Right.
Well, I could, maybe it's not my favorite thing to do, but maybe I could help somebody that loves to shoot them, but maybe they need a little advice on how do you knock on somebody's door and ask for permission?
Yeah, for
sure.
You
know, so you find other ways to fall in love with it. But as far as just getting down and dirty with it, you know, I'm a duck hunter, and things start to turn the corner for me.
So do you have a favorite trip coming up? Do you have one that you're like, damn, that's on the counter, I can't wait?
Alberta, and we're going to freelance. We kind of take turns with like the ranch land thing.
Yeah.
You know, so Cody and the
boys. I'm going to ranch land first time this year. I'm pumped.
Shameless plug. It is. It's the
special place.
It's the one that always makes the roster year in and year out. And if you get to go, you will quickly understand why.
Yeah.
I mean, the hunting up there, the landscape, and then just the host is Rob Reynolds is totally top.
Yeah.
One of my favorite people.
Yeah. I've only heard phenomenal things.
I don't know what ruffles his feathers. I'm yet to find out, but I hope I don't find out.
In 3 days, when you go up there, you go morning, afternoon, morning, afternoon, morning. What most people, most casual waterfowl hunters, what they can do in five hunts there, a lot of people probably aren't going to do that in 5 years.
Yeah, that's really good point.
I mean, being serious.
Yeah,
a lot of people are not that volume. And for you that are wondering what I'm talking about, it's not uncommon to shoot well over 100 in a day with these combos. Between the snows, when you go and the snows start showing up, and you really get into the ducks and the dark geese, the Canadas and the specks, not uncommon. Well, you go up there for 3 days, there's a good chance, a really good chance you shoot 300 plus.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of people that shoot, I mean, if you're not in the right areas, you know, everybody's not in a historic flyaway like this. A lot of people
on weekends, or they only got Saturdays.
A really good year could be 100 birds as a group.
Yeah.
For a lot of people. And that's a good year for a lot. Sure. So what a lot of people can do in several years, you go somewhere like that, and they roll out the red carpet for you. And aside from the hunting, I mean the food, you come back to this just
what
buffet,
is brown gravy,
you know? I mean
it's literally molten sugar.
Oh, but man, it sounds amazing.
I'm looking forward to that freelance. I mean we love our guys, Eastern View, Bryce Collins. I mean the guys fish with him. We're on like year five with Bryce. Just a great guy, loyal. David up at St. Lawrence and that crew. I mean, are there any
that's a hardcore crew.
Are
that's
there
a good
any
crew.
Better big Canada goose killers than those guys? Not no disrespect toward anybody, but the squad that they've got there is, in that area, I mean, come on, like it's ridiculous. But to go up to Canada, we're gonna go see Ben Fuyon in South Dakota.
That'll be great.
I mean, we're gonna go see our guy Tony at Habitat Flats. We've got a couple trips. I've actually never hunted.
Yeah, you've got some King's Bench trips.
I don't know that this morning would actually count as a hunt. I've actually never hunted here. I've never hunted at the 203. And we've got a couple trips on the schedule.
You got some prime dates.
So that's going to be that's going to be a blast. We got some freelance locations that we don't typically disclose.
And that Judy piece.
Yeah, Judy piece. We go see Judy, our guy Troy Pointer. I mean, I got one of the funniest stories ever. I hope this doesn't upset Troy, but we were talking about bands, and Troy loves bands, and he's got a lot of them. I mean, this guy, one, he's an absolute sniper on these open boats out on Lake St. Clair. The guy does not miss diver ripping across the water at Mach 10, and the guy is lethal. But this dude's mad at him. I mean, every single day, and he loves him some bands. I mean, who doesn't? But Troy, he's like next level, dude. I mean, this dude is the definition of this dude is a killer. I mean, he's mad at him. He's a waterfowl killer. Jake, I don't want to mess this quote up about the leg bands, but what did he say that one day? Did I ask him if he had a girlfriend or something? And I think he said no, but I have 129 leg bands or something like that. I mean, it was like unbelievable. And I probably missed on that number. It was probably more than that, but
that's amazing.
I mean, I was like, this guy, he's awesome.
He's got it figured out.
So to go see Troy on St. Clair, you know, I don't want to miss anybody. I'm trying to look at my schedule here, but everybody we hunt with.
It's safe
always,
to say you've got a lot of
they're so
great,
accommodating.
Great
everybody's
spots.
So cool. Yeah.
What's what are your plans, Nathan?
Yeah.
So, man, I'm here at King's Bend for the majority of the season. I'm going to be hosting a bunch of people here with you, which will be a blast. Looking really forward to having some of our partners and clients in, which will be really fun. Some friends and family, which will be a blast. And then come January, it'll be doing the same thing down at our farm in Arkansas on the Black River. We'll be doing some flooded timber hunts. And I've got Asher and the guys coming down two times, which will be really great in January. Hopefully Cody peels away at some point now that we can get him away from King's Bend since that season's over. But yeah, majority of it will be here. Joy to be here. Well, you and I will be best buds here.
You meet Charlie and Hank.
Yeah, you meet Charlie and Hank. You got it. We got it figured out. Yeah, so we learned a lot last season. It was a great first year. We should be dialed in for this year, which would be awesome. and the people we've got coming up is just going to be phenomenal. So
very good.
All right, guys. Well, let's wrap it up. Thanks for coming on, Asher. Obviously, you flew in for this and get some product shots and do all that stuff. So thanks for being here. And Cody, we love hearing your story and learning more about the business side of things, which I think we need to expand on as we kind of go through this. But yeah, thanks everybody for being here.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Absolutely,
we're back.
Podcast. We're back.